Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it's time for another toy department. It's Wednesday morning as we tape this. Post-election day. I had a full night out of the toy department, just in the, I don't know, what do you call that? Housewares? Homewares? The serious washer, dryer, appliance department? that's where I was. Wasn't in the toys.
You're at a department store. Forget the toy department. You're at a department store.
Yeah, it was not in ladies' lingerie. It was just sitting there watching results come in, listening to Brian Williams step all over himself.
So, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm okay. I don't know if anyone needs my hardcore political analysis. It's, you know, you have to sort of take a step back and say, you know, if you think about where things were on November 7th, 2016, the idea that the House could be changing hands seemed pretty implausible. So just, you know, at the time it did, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they had a huge gap in seats. It was the Senate was the close gap and the more reasonable body and you're playing in statewide elections minus gerrymanders, you know, all that stuff, right? That was, you know, and the House narrative has been there now for a while, and we're all sort of used to it, and so now it sort of seems expected. And then when shocking upsets sort of don't start to pile on top of that, everyone goes, oh. But when the reality is, it's quite a lot of movement to move 30, 40 House seats, in, you know. And given that everybody runs, it's probably also more representative of the mood of the country. So, you know, I mean, look, there were W's and L's on both sides last night, no matter whose side you were on. And so it's sort of easy to kind of pull your own narrative out of the whole thing, you know, when it's all said and done. But some truly despicable people lost their jobs yesterday. And
that's cool.
And I feel not bad at all about enjoying that bit of schadenfreude. Even if some truly despicable people also got jobs yesterday, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So, nice pronunciation on schadenfreude.
Thank you. Yeah. Some non-despicable people also won. So, you know, I'm not trying to say that everybody who isn't playing for my team is a total ass, but many of them are. So maybe that's a good place to start. Not with your feelings about the election, although you're welcome to give them.
Nah, I got nothing to say.
But I'm much more curious about your feelings about Samantha Bee. Did you watch she had her normal Wednesday episode, and then there was sort of a bonus Monday episode. I don't know if you saw both of those or not.
I did, and the one before that as well.
Oh, excellent. And there's also one, I believe, tonight, a post-election one. For those people,
I may skip that one.
Who can't get enough of Sam B. Doesn't sound like you're one of those people.
It's not that. Well, sure, it is that. I mean, it's not. I definitely am not a person who can't get enough Sam B.
Okay,
but that's not an insult, right?
I mean, it's
that can be. She's great.
I would throw that in the backhanded compliment category. Is where I would throw that. Is that?
There's only so many people in the world I can not get enough of.
Yeah, well, look, we talked about this in the context of the Hasan Minhaj discussion last week. There's a lot of competition for your weekly political takedown eyeballs. You know what I mean? So in this sense, I think the question of whether like you can't get enough of someone is actually it's pertinent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, agreed. And in that case, yeah, that she does not quite rise to that bar. But it's a funny show. It's very much Daily Show. You know, it's Jokes on the news and maybe one or two field pieces. And they're just as funny as Jon Stewart's Daily Show was, I would say.
Yeah.
She's not quite the presenter that he is, but I loved a couple of the field pieces. I loved the Ashley Nicole Brown piece on the Vermont, the trans governor candidate in Vermont. Did she win?
She did not. No, a Republican won the governorship of Vermont, which I found to be deeply strange, knowing what I know about Vermont.
Unfortunately, I think it tells you more about where this country's at with the trans rights than anything. But anyway, that was a great piece by Ashley Nicole Brown. Super funny and also like informative and cool story to share. I loved the money and politics piece from Monday's episode down to the hilarious Ben and Jerry's bit where they put foil covered money in the ice cream and then they were like, oh, that's disgusting, which was a great metaphor for money and politics. So
let's see, Vermont coming back around.
Yeah, exactly. And while I do not think I'll watch this show again anytime soon, I did enter the contest to win a pint of that ice cream.
Oh, nice.
It was free. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's funny. It's good. I enjoyed the dick boil at the start of last week's episode. That was funny, a funny bit. She's funny. But I would rather watch Hasan Minhaj and John Oliver as I do, and I think that's enough for me.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, you maybe oversimplify the format a little bit like that. I would also say that maybe her greatest particular strength is the monologue kind of rant style thing. The last couple of episodes I wouldn't put like in her necessarily her best. And they you got some sense, and I think you mentioned a few people, the contributors on the show are often really good, like that some of the field pieces done by sort of other folks oftentimes really shine well too. I can't say like, oh my god, you know what I mean? Because it, at some point when you have all these options, and that includes the actual Daily Show, which is still on the air and a thing, you're going to pick the ones that just sort of suit your taste the best. But I do like Sambi's take on it, and I do like actually hearing from a feminist about some of these things, because the show often provides some perspective on that many of these other shows do not. And you know, I think they tackle some of those issues really, really well.
And you know what? There's value in that obviously I'm not getting if I'm watching John Oliver and Hasan Minhaj. So I see that. I get that. It's just, you know, if she's the third... If there's a third slot of political news humor opening up in my viewing schedule, I'll give you Sam B ahead of Trevor Noah. How's that?
Yeah. Well, and there's, you know, like, you know, we didn't mention Seth Meyers, you know, or like so much.
I'm unimpressed by those. I mean, at the end of the day, those are still late night shows. The format is still based around promoting other people's stuff.
Yeah. I honestly think Seth Meyers should probably just turn a closer look into the show. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really understand why he needs to be interviewing the TV
stars. Well, I imagine
that
because
Fallon
that's why the
get.
Show's on the air.
I guess. I don't know.
I imagine the parent company is responsible for a lot of that.
I mean, it's Lorne Michaels. He can pretty much do whatever he wants over at the parent company, from what I can tell.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, how many guests do you think Seth Meyers has a book or go out and get versus they're provided by the parent company to promote a movie that the parent company is producing?
Oh, I would say, I don't think it's necessary. I think all those shows are sort of driven
maybe
by
like
the bookers,
50-50.
Not necessarily the parent company. And, you know,
well,
it's
okay.
Probably easier to get someone who's doing something associated with your parent company. But
I don't feel like Seth Meyers could stop having guests that promote peripheral products on his show.
Oh, I think that show. Well, look, we can.
I don't know.
My guess would be that show is there to drive advertising revenue before it is promote, corporate synergy. You know what I mean? So if the show's drawing numbers and people want to buy ads, they can pretty much do whatever the F they want, as would be my guess. Or at least whatever the F Lauren wants. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. So Sam B is a like for you. You may not be quite as high as I am, because I'd put it ahead of Hasan Minhaj, in kind of the same way that that you feel. That's no shade on the Hasan Minhaj show, which I've now sort of folded into my Sunday routine. So
yeah,
you know, I like it quite a bit. Although I did think
I think you have a bigger stomach for politics stuff than me, anyway.
Yeah, I'd say that's true, and more than most. I did think it was a little bit, I don't know what the word is. I was a little uncomfortable with Hasan Minhaj doing an Amazon takedown on Netflix.
Right.
You know, seemed a little self-serving.
I mean, I hear you, but also I think his point would be in response to that.
He did address it at one point too, by the way.
He did, and I think if you just, I think his, you know, quick response to your particular criticism would be, if Amazon was exclusively the primary competitor to Netflix in the streaming industry, we wouldn't have to have this show. The right. Problem is
that they're in everything. I get that.
They're in everything.
And it wasn't like he spent a long time going after Man in the High Castle or something. You know what
no,
I mean? But
no. I mean, I think it was a pretty fair
assessment. But, I mean, look. The conglomerate this thing is airing on is also all about, you know, global domination and disrupting the TV industry and has done stuff from the cost side and all of that. You know what I mean? So
I think it's less of a – it's obviously a less concerning space.
Correct.
Than the Amazon space, which is every space.
Well, look, they are – and maybe this will be I guess it won't be. Never mind. I was going to say they're kind of, you know, Amazon has that evil corp vibe, right? And not in that they're evil, but right. In that they're everywhere. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
right.
Maybe evil. Who knows? You know what I mean? Who knows what lurks behind the Taco Bell loving facade of Jeff Bezos?
I mean, yeah, at this point, they're probably not evil, though, right? Whatever. This is a dumb conversation to have on this podcast, especially.
And I will say that's a feather in Hasan Minhaj's cap in terms of the show, is that the video archiving there that they sort of that borrowed from The Daily Show, they've done pretty well. You know what I mean? Like, they've been finding some YouTube gems every week on that show, and I do appreciate that.
For sure.
All right. Do you want to talk about – do you want to stay in television, or should we talk about the movie we saw?
Might as well stick with TV for now, right?
All right. So The Deuce wrapped up on Sunday night for this the second of three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I love getting to the end of David Simon shows.
It's great.
You know? Because you step back and you go, oh, man, like, I didn't even know it at the time necessarily, but what a season, you know? And I love this show. I understand it's not like it's not This Is Us. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like you're going to watch time and just totally get what it's about. It's you know.
My parents quit this season.
Yeah, it plays hard to get.
They just couldn't handle the world. They were just like, it's so dark and so much messed up stuff is happening. Like, it's. I guess they took the bad time entertainment out, essentially, from The Deuce.
I am really attached to these characters and their stories.
Me too.
You know what
That's
I mean?
What I was going to say. For what it's worth, I never considered that.
Yeah.
I mean, I am attached, much like The Wire, I am attached to the smallest characters on this show. I'm desperately attached to Black Frankie, for instance.
Yeah.
What an incredible character. I think I continue to think that Franco... You know, I actually think you could quibble with, like, how good is he as each character on the show, but the way he manages to convincingly portray a difference between twins while being the same person is remarkable.
Yeah, and there is, like, those are two distinct people that he's playing.
Completely distinct, and even without the haircut, you'd be able to tell. It's just... everything. He embodies two fully different people who look the same. It's a pretty incredible performance.
Yep. And it's weird. Like, sometimes stuff happens and you're like, oh man, I had no idea how much I cared about Darlene, you know?
Right.
Like,
yep. Totally.
And I do.
I found myself tearing up in the final scenes with Candy when, like, it seems like good things are happening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, who knows? It seems like maybe good things won't end up happening by the time we jump forward in time. And I'm interested to see how far forward we jump this time. But I really hope it's not too far, because I, too, am very attached to a lot of people on this show.
Yeah, I agree. And I have a feeling it's not going to be too far. I think it'd be early 80s, you know?
You'd imagine.
See them next.
You'd imagine. And they've set us up where, you know, 7 years after where they're at right now, there's so many different spots all these characters could be in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll be excited to see the journey to that. It's just, you know, it's a well-written show. There are so many fantastic performances, and now we're at that sort of sweet spot where these characters have been lived in by people who are taking really good care of them. And, you know, the way that they interact has real meaning, you know?
I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. And you feel that sort of earnedness in, you know, when major things happen on the show. Slight spoiler alert, but you know, when Ashley turns up, it's a moment that you watch resonate through a number of characters, and you totally feel it and understand it. And that's not as easy to do as it seems.
Yeah. By the way, same thing happens with CeCe not turning up.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Absolutely true. And yeah, I'm really excited to see a third season of this, and I'll also say, you know, it's not The Wire in terms of the sort of social commentary weight, but it does have a lot to say about politics. You know, it has a lot to say about the way America functions, especially big cities.
Yeah, and the way the money flows, you know.
The way money flows, and it's all still very relevant.
Yeah. Yeah, I would recommend to your folks, if they're listening, or you know, if you've gotten off the train on this one, come back in. Come back in. It pays off.
I mean, with any luck, it'll be less seedy in the next season, given that the Times Square itself is likely going to change a lot.
Yeah, well, and I feel like sort of L.A. is an inescapable part of the future of this show, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think I would imagine a decent number of these characters will be based in L.A. by the time we find them again.
Yeah, because they're, you know, I don't know how much of a porn industry there was in New York in the mid-80s, you know what I mean?
Well, that, and then, you know, I wouldn't rule out people just clearing out for the finer coast. You know, if you think about Vince and oh my goodness, Annie, what's her name?
Yeah, Annie.
She's basically becoming a hippie.
Or Abby. It's Abby, sorry. My bad.
Abby, right, Abby. She's basically becoming a hippie, and he just wants like a nice, you know, beachfront property to settle down on. Like, I wouldn't rule anything out.
Yeah, and it is interesting, like, the way that they shoot L.A., like, when they go to L.A.,
mm-hmm.
It looks pretty awesome.
Sure does. As I think L.A. in the 70s was.
Yeah, yeah, sure does. So we'll see. But I'm definitely excited to find out where that show is going to go in season 3, and I will miss it until it's gone and be very stoked when it's coming back.
No doubt.
What's up? Do we know what's up next on HBO's Sunday night schedule with the Deuce departing?
There actually is a new show this week. I cannot remember offhand what it is called, but if you give me just a second, next week, not this Sunday, but the following Sunday, there is a show called My Brilliant Friend coming out on HBO.
Yeah, I don't know that I've seen any trailers for that.
A woman recounts the lifelong friendship and conflicts with a girl she met in primary school in Naples during the early 1950s. I don't know anything beyond that. But that is a new Sunday HBO show, for what it's worth. And of course, camping, which neither of us particularly enjoyed, remains on. And there's a new Showtime show next Sunday as well. The 18th. That's about some sort of prison escape.
Oh, that looks great. That's Paul Dano directed that.
Yeah.
That's
like a limited series, I believe.
Yeah, and Patricia Arquette plays it's based on the, that lady that got those two guys out of prison that she was having sex with there, and there was a big manhunt.
Right.
Benicio del Toro, I believe, is the other guy involved in that. That looks awesome. I'm all in on that, which is good because that doesn't look like I'm going to be watching a lot of My Brilliant Friend.
Okay. All right. I don't know if you've ever watched. I never watched Narcos. Did you?
Season one. Yeah, I did watch.
Oh, that's what it was. There is another HBO show. It's not Sunday. That's why I was confused. But Room 104 comes back this week.
Oh, okay. I might check a few of those out. I never finished watching the first season, though.
The first season was so weird. I mean, we did talk about it that much, to say that. I expect I'll give season two a chance. Why not?
Why not?
It's a totally new set of stories, and it's certainly an interesting canvas for an interesting, creative team.
It's a nice thing about anthology, if you trust the people making it, you know, why not
yeah.
do a new bet?
Even if you don't love one, why not give the next one a chance? Yeah. So we got that going for us, which is nice.
All right. You want to jump into the movies?
No, well, we got the other TV show quickly, right? I don't think we need much on this because I don't think either of us finished it. But how far did you get in Bodyguard?
Three and change.
Okay, so not all of four.
Yeah. Are there major plot points in four? Because obviously there's a major plot point in three.
Well, kind of.
Yeah, damn it. All right, well, let's talk about it. Let me ask you,
where are you at in terms of the resolution of the plot point in three that you're referring to?
Not that far. So that gets resolved?
In the words of Hawk Harrelson, she gone. So spoiler alert, I guess. This show is so confusing. Not so much confusing like I can't follow the action because it's not that complicated. Confusing in like what on earth are they doing? So tell me if you feel the same way I did. At the end of episode three, and we're just going to spoil the middle of this show at this point. I don't know how much that spoils the thing in general, but it's six episodes long. And at the end of episode three, a bomb goes off. Very unexpectedly, I thought.
Yeah, did not see that coming.
And
rewound it a couple times.
Yeah. And so and the aftermath of that bomb within that same episode seems to be that one of the main characters is very injured at best, and B, the way it's shot almost seems to. It's like shot and cut in a way that seems to suggest that the other main character could potentially be involved. Did you feel that?
I didn't really.
Okay. So maybe that was just me then.
Yeah.
Because the way it was shot, I was like, wait a second.
I mean, the show seems to sort of go on and suggest it. So it's possible that I just kind of missed it. You know what I mean?
Okay. But if that's what, the show goes on to have characters suggested, but the show itself seems to stay out of it, if you get my meaning.
Right, gotcha. Yeah, that's fair.
And I just thought the way they shot the last few cuts of the previous episode was meant to, like, hey, what if he was a, you know, and then they sort of just don't, and they don't do anything with that from the, I don't know. That was weird, and just in general to, like, exploding this bomb is such a bizarre choice.
Yeah,
and then,
although, you know, I mean, part of my complaint was, like, you could see the romance sort of telegraphed a mile away.
And
this was a thing
progressed.
That was not telegraphed, so I
no, that's
appreciated
true.
That. You know what I mean?
the romance also was progressing at an absurd rate. Like, yeah. they have sex one time, and all of a sudden she's saying, I want you to not be my bodyguard. I want you to be by my side because you choose to be. And you're like, when did they fall in love? And then she blows up. And yeah, spoiling your next 15 minutes of screen time, she's dead.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, that is not a huge spoiler for me because I was like, she's not making it out of this. The bomb was intended for her. You know what I mean?
Like, right. Well, but also, like, now there's this whole bizarre investigation into the brown guy, you know, who was standing nearby.
Yeah.
Who it seems pretty clear to the viewer is not the guy. But like it begins to seem like one of the government agencies did this for some reason. Like, it's just
deep state.
It's becoming the most involved conspiracy. And again, spoiler alert, but like, he tries to shoot himself, but somebody has replaced the bullets in his gun with blanks. And it's just like,
well, here's the thing. And I think,
okay, you guys,
I feel like we identified this week. It's not a very good television show, but I think it's a fun television show, and I think all like that. It's kind of like 24 in that way, right? You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, I think we signed up for what we thought was maybe going to be like a Luther-esque miniseries.
Yeah, it comes at you with that British prestige, you know?
And then it turns out to basically be 24. We're just like, cliffhangers and stuff exploding everywhere, which is also fun and good in its own way. It's just very different than it seemed to be.
Sometimes you think you're getting the charcuterie plate, and you realize that somebody just took one of those like salamis that you get at Foster Farms and sliced it up and threw it out there for you. And you know what? Salami's still good, right?
Salami tastes delicious.
Not what you hope for, but salami's still good.
It's not even not what you hoped for. It's just not what you ordered.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's
fair. It's a thing you're also perfectly happy with, but it's a different thing.
Right. So recalibrate your expectations for the bodyguard. I do also like that it turns out not a very good bodyguard.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, because frankly, at the beginning, when he's like being an elite bodyguard, but also like having panic attacks, I'm like, how is he such a good bodyguard with these panic attacks?
Yeah, had panic attacks, had sex with the client, if you will.
Yeah, and got her killed. So,
and got her killed. Yeah,
that's the bad bodyguard trifecta.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to do it much worse than that. Oh, speaking of hard to do it much worse than that, can we talk about Bohemian Rhapsody now?
Oh, man. The most surprising thing to me is how many people, and it's not even that many, have told me since I tweeted about it that they liked it.
Oh, I didn't see you tweet about it. I missed those tweets. And now I'm a little
sad. They
weren't
that complicated. I can express them to you right now.
I mean, I have an idea.
It's just I have an easy way for anyone who wants to see Bohemian Rhapsody to save themselves $12 to $25 and also, you know, some gas and an hour or two, and it's just to watch concert clips of Queen online.
Specifically, just watch the Live Aid performance. I think it's available as a whole chunk.
It certainly is, but I would watch more, because why not? It's spectacular. I would watch an hour of Queen concert videos. I'll say this. The only thing particularly redeeming about this – well, you know what? I do want to give credit to the guy who played Brian May, who I really thought was good. But other than that performance and the guy who played – and Rami Malek playing Freddie Mercury, which even that I think has become overrated.
Agreed.
Like the
fact that he's still getting Oscar talk after people have seen this movie is
crazy.
No.
Definitely no, because here's what he did do. What he did do is perfectly, somewhat uncannily, capture the stage presence of Live Aid era Freddie Mercury. It's I thought that, I thought, like, as a mimic of Live Aid, he's a knockout.
Yeah. I would agree with that. That was what I was going to say. Like, the onstage Freddy, I think he nails.
Well, but here's what I discovered in my recent watching of Queen videos is onstage Freddy took some time to develop. So I'm not even sure he got that part right.
Well, look, the movie, the second that you start trying to bring the real life of Queen timeline into this movie, it falls apart. I'm sure people have read about the historical inaccuracies of this. And I'm fine with dramatic license and don't expect it to nail everything.
No, but the biggest
this movie
thing...
goes out of its way to sort of change some things that, you know what I mean? Like, meaningful things.
The biggest one being that they completely misrepresent the end of his life and the way Queen was getting along.
Yeah, and Live Aid.
Which is such, and his diagnosis with HIV and AIDS. It's
completely... And his solo career, also that. Like, a lot of it. Yeah.
What a bizarre choice. It makes no sense. And I don't understand why. It also, here's the thing. What I had kind of heard going in, because I try not to listen to too much of this crap going in, was, well, Brian May and the drummer, I believe, were like involved and had too much influence. And that's why it was inaccurate and not as good. But if that's the case, they especially blew it because it doesn't make them look good.
Yeah, no, it is the case. In fact, it's the first thing I wrote in my notes. They're credited as executive producers, and I hadn't read into the backstory of the film. Obviously, the backstory of the film is quite complicated, including just the making of this. Right, they changed directors with like 2 weeks to go in the movie.
Yeah, so. And they, Sacha Baron Cohen was originally cast and quit because he didn't like the movie they wrote.
Right. Well, and we'll get into that in a minute. So May and Taylor were executive producers, but also more importantly, right, they controlled the rights to the music of Queen, which is sort of going to be essential for a movie called Bohemian Rhapsody, right? So they have a hammer. You know what I mean? It's not just like, hey, we're here and we're on the set and we're getting a producer credit. You know what I mean? Like,
do you feel as I do, like they hammered their thumbs?
Yeah. I mean, to me, just the movie itself, regardless of whether I thought it was good or bad or not, just sort of has the fingerprints of like history is written by the victors. You know what I mean? Like the villains of the movie are, cartoonishly obvious. In fact, like, the guy's name was Paul, I think it was. The guy that sort of plays Freddy's kind of...
The evil gay.
Down low lover. Yeah. And yeah. Sort of side... Like, that movie takes every finger it's got and like, points right at him. Basically like, hey, here's the guy who killed Freddie Mercury, basically, is what the movie's pretty much saying. Killed and cheated him, cheated us, you know.
An evil gay man stole him away from the band, took his money... got him into drugs and promiscuous sex and ruined everything. And only when he realized he was stricken with a deadly disease did he come crawling back. And none of that's true.
Right. And that's – so, the Mike Myers record guy is this sort of like cartoonishly evil guy who doesn't get a thing. But like this sounds like –
That part I'm fine with, because that's just that, like that I can live with.
It's the stock, look, the people, anyone in the music industry is a villain in these rock and roll stories. The artist is always right. I get it. But like, it kind of goes back to A Star Is Born. Like, Reg, right? Reg is the evil villain, even though when you step back and look at what he did in terms of managing her career, like Reg. Killed it, man. Reg took her from a nobody to a Grammy winner in the space of like 8 months.
I understand frustration with this trope.
He also basically killed her, right? Or basically killed him.
I understand your frustration with this trope, given what you do, but also like I think you have to realize there's a very niche complaint.
Yeah, fair enough. And that's not my point. my point is, these seem like perspectives of two guys who play in the band. You know what I mean? Like,
kind of, except again,
here are dudes that screwed us over. Let's get that in the story. You know?
Yes, and it comes off seeming petty and pointless, and I'm confused about why they handled it this way. If in fact they really had that much direct influence.
Yeah. So, all right. So
that I think, in fact, although I think the guy who played Brian May was good, I think the movie probably does disservice to no one more than Brian May, because frankly, his contributions to their sound as a guitarist, I think, are nearly as substantial as Freddie Mercury's contributions to rock. Like, what Queen did musically with the guitar is completely unique and original and kind of magical. And they didn't do anything on that.
You're right. They really didn't do a lot. I don't feel like the guy that played Brian May was great. I don't feel like any of the guys in the band's performances were great. And I don't feel like you know anybody in the band after it's over, which I think is one of the principal parts of it. Like, a lot of times you come out of a biopic, right, and you want to you get hooked into the story and you want to read up more, right? You know, you want to live in it. I wanted to read more about Queen and watch more about Queen after this, but it was different. I wanted to because I felt like, this can't be the actual story, so I would like to know what really happened.
And they didn't really tell much of any story, as you kind of pointed out. It reminded me of I would imagine not. You did not read Harry Potter, did you?
I have not read any Harry Potter. I've not read any Harry Potter, and I haven't seen any Harry Potter.
Okay, so this is an analogy that may be somewhat lost on you, but
I'm already bored.
I'm trying to think what book to movie adaptation would apply, but this happens a lot. It's particularly obvious with, like, the fourth and beyond Harry Potter movies, Goblet of Fire and later, where the films, while well-acted and beautifully drawn on screen, simply can't be more than a Reader's Digest version of the story by the time you get to the fourth book, which is hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages long, right? Mm-hmm. So when you go to see a Harry Potter movie, you're essentially going to see scenes from the book. And it's I always wondered how someone who hadn't read the book would really follow the plot, because it's happening so quickly and it's so they just don't have time to really tie scenes together. It's just like scenes from the book that you'll probably love if you read the book. And I never really understood why anybody who didn't read the book enjoyed it. So, although some people did. To me, this movie felt like scenes from the life of, like, random scenes from the life of Queen, not stitched together well, no clear thought really to developing any characters or saying anything interesting about the band, except not only that, but they were like the wrong scenes and not good scenes, and half of them never happened.
Yeah.
So I just don't understand what the point of any of this was.
It was
other than to see them on stage, which those were the best parts of the movie, but why not just make a documentary then?
Or like a music video, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
Like, I feel like the non Freddie Mercury people were basically 75% of their thing is just them performing, right? And it's a movie that is obsessed with playing the hits. You know what I mean? Like,
yes, it does.
Literally. It's like, yep,
all
right.
I've had Queen in my head all week.
Good. I'm going to make sure we get our Somebody to Love scene, and here's our Keep Yourself Alive scene, and here's our Another One Bites the Dust, and we're getting them all in, you know? Although it weirdly under pressure, they just sort of snuck in at the end.
They like montaged it. That's another thing. David Bowie, not in this movie. John Lennon, not in this movie. Like, why don't we see his relationships with other major bands at the time?
Yeah, you know, did you know this solo record that, you know, supposedly destroyed the band? In real life, you know, he was working with Michael Jackson on a lot of it. Like, that might have been interesting to, like, talk about.
Exactly. How do we not even hear about that?
It's just sort of like, and that's the thing is, like, you know, obviously there's been a lot of talk about the representation of you know, his sexuality and his partying, and you know, can you do that in a PG-13 movie? First of all, it never should have been a PG-13 movie. I think, like,
okay,
this is the last guy in the world who should have a PG-13 movie made about him.
But that is at the end of my list of complaints, and it's even at the end of my list of complaints about his sexuality. My chief complaint about his sexuality is they somehow in 2018 they somehow managed to shoot a movie where they made it feel taboo to be gay. Like, what are you doing? How is that possible?
My issue was not so much, and this is sort of getting to this. I wanted to kind of jump in on one, the Sacha Baron Cohen thing, was that he wanted to lean hard into the partying, homosexuality, nudity direction, Brian and Roger were super uncomfortable with, and that's why that didn't work out. But I do think that that movie with Sacha Baron Cohen being Freddie Mercury and also sort of being fearless in the way that he is would have been fantastic and made you feel super uncomfortable, maybe less popular. I don't know, but I don't know that it necessarily would have hurt Queen's legacy. But my real issue with
I also quickly on that, I also don't think there's any reason to believe he couldn't have done just as good a job as Rami Malek did. And that's not a shot at Rami Malek, who again I thought was good, but not quite as spectacular overall as everyone's saying. I think everyone's so impressed with the physicality, and it is impressive, but like that's all he really did.
The physicality is great, but he's not a fully inhabited human being. And this kind of touches on my issue with the portrayal of homosexuality and AIDS and all of that. Is it's like, it's not that the movie doesn't want to tell you about this stuff. It's all there. It's just not very interested in it. You know, it's yada, yada, yada is everything almost. It's like, here's a quick montage of him coming through an S&M club, which apparently he spent a good chunk of the latter part of his lives in. Like, oh, here's a party where there's some coke on the table, but we're moving on. You know what I mean? And then, the AIDS scene is like, hey, there's a guy in a doctor's office with some sores on his face, and he goes, ayo, and then, like, that's it. He had AIDS.
Right.
It's like the movie is not interested in it. It's telling you what's happening. It's not interested in exploring it, and that attitude filters down through everything. It's the kind of movie that tells you that Freddie Mercury had insatiable loneliness that turned him into this kind of star that he is, but doesn't explore those feelings or what caused that in any meaningful way. Like, the conflict of his parents is shown, but not really explored. You have no understanding of why Freddie Mercury is the way he is when you leave this movie, other than the movie just literally tells you. It tells you everything and shows you nothing.
Correct. When he pops back up at his parents' house late in the movie, I was like, oh, we are going to see his parents again. Because it was... I assumed we weren't, because his... like, that side of him was not addressed at all after he left.
I like the ridiculousness of, oh, hi, we're in your living room, and then we're just going to drive over and do Live Aid.
Yeah,
like,
we just
stopped
by.
I'm pretty sure that's not how that day played out.
I just stopped by with my new boyfriend, who I just re-met today for the first time in years, after meeting him one time previously as a server at my house. Again, none of which is true. I stopped randomly by his house. He decided to come with me. We stopped randomly here basically to say I love you, and then we're going to go do Live Aid with AIDS, which actually, again, not true. He didn't know at that point that he had AIDS.
Well,
the band had not broken up.
The band
They'd been rehearsing all along.
The band played 50 shows between 1984 and 85.
They released an album.
Yeah, they were on tour in the months leading before Live Aid, and the movie makes it sound like they hated each other and just got back together to play this one show where they hadn't rehearsed at all, and turned out to be magical. You know,
and like, he hadn't used his voice in 2 years.
Yeah, like he literally made a solo record and a Queen record in that space.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So look, the movie is ridiculous and not very good. But I do also sort of understand why people could say that they liked it.
Well, because Queen's music is spectacular and it's playing the whole time.
And there's a lot of it, yeah. So, like, it's not a bad – like, you won't have a bad time in the theater, but this movie, if you think about it for even a second
– Well, and if you go in with expectations of being told anything interesting from a story perspective about Freddie Mercury or Queen, you're going to be hopelessly disappointed.
Yeah, I would agree. 100%. Shout out, by the way, to my other podcast partner, Stephen Hayden, who not only wrote a really good piece about the actual rock and roll stuff and some of the gives you some of the actual historical context around this movie, but at the end of it, I thought had a really great idea that if they had made a movie that was, during the recording of Queen's last album. And, you know, Freddie's sick, the band knows, and then you're kind of seeing his life unfold in flashback through the eyes of other band members. You could even have other different people play Freddie, you know,
yeah,
depending on each person's perspective. That would have been an excellent movie. That would have gotten a ton of Queen music in there, and that I feel like you would have actually understood who this guy was. Because it's crazy,
you know what?
To have a 2-hour and 15-minute movie about Freddie Mercury and not feel like you understand him at all.
I don't – this is obviously no shade to Steven because that's a great idea. But what's truly disappointing and upsetting about what this movie turns out to be is that you could literally throw a dart at a wall and come up with 15 better ideas for telling some piece, part, or version of the Queen story that would give you a better understanding of the band and that man than this did. It's so easy to do something interesting with one of the most interesting bands of all time. And that's why I think both of us are so disappointed, despite, as you said, being moderately entertained for most of the time we were in the theater.
What did you think about the decision to like show about 20 minutes worth of Live Aid?
Frankly, given what else I watched, I was thrilled. Right. I would have rather watched that than more of the nothing that led up to it, right?
I guess. I just...
Wasn't that the best part of the movie?
No, I don't... I just feel like...
What did you enjoy more watching that movie? What did you enjoy more than Live Aid?
Yeah, you're right. I guess you're right at the end.
I hear your point, right? I mean, I hear what you're saying in that wasting 20 minutes with a shot-for-shot remake of a concert you can watch on YouTube seems silly, but they weren't doing anything with the rest of that time.
Right. I just would have liked to have, like, learned – again, I just wanted to learn more about Freddie Mercury and who he was, you know?
Yeah, like, a totally different movie with a YouTube video of the Live Aid performance running through the credits would have been a much better choice.
Agreed. And it was telling to me that when I read some more about the behind the scenes, I read an interview with a guy who was just really, really bummed that they didn't give you more of Live Aid. It was like, we shot, and we're hoping it comes out on the extended DVD. We shot way more. And I'm like, you literally got every song of the performance in there.
They must have shot the whole thing twice if they shot more.
And the way that they, you know, the way that it's framed, it's basically like, hey, remember when Queen rocked Live Aid so hard that all the starving kids got fed?
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like, they win Live Aid, essentially. Which is sort of hard to do.
That's right. They win Live Aid, which is hilarious, especially since, they don't even... other than those intercut shots with them winning Live Aid by the people answering phones really fast, like, it's literally... You get a better view on YouTube.
Yep. Go watch the YouTube of Live Aid, again.
Do that.
Stress it. Just...
And there's a few good Live Queen, like, movies. Like, this stuff exists, and it's a better use of your time.
Yep. And I would say there are many books about Freddie Mercury out there. Go read one of those if you would like to know more. And I may wind up doing that at this point.
You're going to learn nothing from this film, that's for sure.
I certainly want to know more about the rest of his life, which sounds pretty interesting. It sounds like he lived one of the more insane lives of anyone in the 20th century.
One of the most insane lives, one of the most interesting people, and one of the most fascinating bands in the history of the world. And this is just a dull movie outside of a couple of concert scenes.
Yep. And it just feels like, you know, it feels like watching one of those football games, like maybe a Jacksonville Jaguars game, where, you know, the coach is so protective of the small lead that he has that the team sort of just shells up and, you know, they're going to blow it. That's kind of what this movie did with Freddie Mercury's legacy. They're so precious and protective of it.
The prevent defense of biopics.
Yeah. Or the draw play on 3rd and 9 of biopics.
There you go. Yeah.
That's what you got. So yeah, not a fan of Bohemian Rhapsody, I would say.
No.
And expectations were super high coming in, right?
Yeah, I think that's part of our problem, I think.
I don't know, man. If Widows sucks, I'm in trouble.
Me too, or Creed 2 for that matter.
I gotta dial down my hopes about things, I think.
I have a lot of hopes for a lot of movies this month, man.
All right, so are we still trying to see First Man for next week? I blew that.
I feel like we might have to bump that to like when it comes out on video, because I believe Widows comes out on Friday, and I don't know if.
Yeah, I'd rather go see that.
Me too, and I don't know if we're going to go for the Oscar bait, but I think Green Book's out as well.
Green Book?
Yes, the Mahershala Ali, Viggo Mortensen.
I'm not familiar.
Buddy drama?
Not familiar. But that's
not familiar?
But I like all the words you just said.
Oh, this is major Oscar bait. This is Viggo Mortensen. It's a reverse Driving Mrs. Daisy. It's Viggo Mortensen is a, I think, Italian tough guy.
He's New York bouncer Tony Lip.
Yeah, he's hired by an African-American jazz musician.
A Jamaican-American classical pianist, Don Shirley. Okay.
All
sorry,
right.
I'm reading
it off the internet.
Yeah, I'm on the Wikipedia page. And it's directed by Peter Farrelly. Okay.
Yes, it's a dramatic outing from Peter Farrelly, but you would imagine there will be some funny scenes in it, given his pedigree. And obviously two great actors and all of the sorts of topics and period piece stuff that makes it an Oscar wet dream. So yeah. I imagine we'll be hearing a lot about that one, whether we see it or not.
That will be a big step up, because I literally heard nothing about it until now.
93% on Rotten Tomatoes as of now, for whatever that means.
But yeah, sounds good. If that's playing near me, then I'm in.
Okay, so if we're doing movies, Widows and Green Book are both on the list. You and I will develop a separate priority, but I think we'd like to see both of them.
I think we got to throw Homecoming out there now, right?
Yeah, we also got to do Homecoming, and I think we sort of said we'd be down to try Room 104, correct?
Yeah. Now, do you know? We talked about Homecoming a little bit. And certainly the buzz on it is Julia Roberts' vehicle.
Well, but I'm also – I am just as intrigued by Sam Esmail, I think.
Yes, and Sam Esmail, that seems to be the post-show buzz is, you know –
And it's not just Julia Roberts either.
Right, and that's what I was going to say is, like, there are a lot of people that you – really like in the show. Have you watched any of it yet? I watched a little over the.
No, but I've seen several previews now, and it's a murderer's row.
Yeah.
Of like high class television performers.
Got a lot of people. Your Smilf girl's in there even.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I miss her.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah, it's a really excellent cast, and we don't have to say too much about it now because we're going to talk about it next week. But I do have some thoughts, and Sam Esmail, certainly one of the more interesting figures in television right now, for sure. All right, so that sounds like we got a full boat, right?
Agreed. Although, let me just ask, it's not brand new, but I've been seeing a lot of hype around the new Vince Staples record. Have you listened, or would you be interested in listening to that?
Yeah, I would check that out. Is it out in the world, or is it...
I think it's been out for a couple weeks.
Okay.
All right, so we got Homecoming, Room 104, a couple of movies in Widows and Green Book, and maybe some Vince Staples.
Yeah, that's definitely a full boat.
Party on.
All right, say goodbye.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.